All right, welcome to another Deep Dive with the Deep Dive. Today we're going to be looking into something, well, pretty important for all of you aspiring lawyers out there.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about how much protection you have as an attorney when you're, you know, going back and forth with opposing counsel before a lawsuit is even filed.
Right.
How much can you actually say without, you know, worrying about a defamation lawsuit or something like that? And the case we're going to unpack today to really explore this is Messina v. Krakauer, which comes out of the D.C. Circuit.
Yes.
And it really digs deep into this kind of this line, this very fine line between advocating for your client zealously, you know, doing your job, versus potentially saying things that get you into some hot water.
Yeah, I mean, this is a case that I think every law student, every new lawyer really needs to know, because it really does sort of lay out what you can and can't say in those initial demand letters or settlement letters, you know, in that pre-litigation phase.
Right.
Without, you know, having to worry about being sued for defamation.
Right, exactly.
And at the heart of this is something called the judicial proceedings privilege. And you can kind of think of it as a legal shield for attorneys in certain situations.
Okay, a legal shield. All right. I like that. It's a good analogy.
Yeah.
So let's, before we get into all the legal nuances and the specifics of this case, let's just kind of lay the groundwork, you know, set the stage for our listeners.
Sure.
What exactly were Messina and Fontana even fighting about in the first place? Like, what was the underlying dispute here?
So this case involves two women, Corrine Messina and Susan Fontana.
Okay.
And they were co-owners of an online business called TotallyItalian.com.
TotallyItalian.com.
Yeah, very creative.
Yeah.
But as is pretty common in many business partnerships, you know, things started to go south. They had some serious disagreements about how the company was being managed.
Yeah, yeah. Happens all the time, right?
Happens all the time. And eventually these disputes, they escalated to the point where Fontana decided she needed to lawyer up. She needed to get legal counsel.
Okay. And that brings us to attorney Krakauer. So he's representing Fontana. What exactly did he do or say that led to him, you know, getting sued by Messina?
So Krakauer, acting on behalf of Fontana, he sent a letter to Messina. And this letter, you know, it wasn't just like a, hey, we have a few concerns kind of a letter.
Mm-hmm.
This letter contained some very strong accusations, including Krakauer wrote that he had serious concerns about the propriety and legality of some of Messina's actions in managing the business.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He specifically called out failures to share, you know, crucial business information, making decisions unilaterally without, you know, consulting Fontana, and even raised the possibility of breaches of her fiduciary duties as a co-owner.
Okay. So, I mean, he's laying it all out there, right? I would imagine Messina probably was not too happy to receive this letter.
Yeah. Understatement of the year, I think. But there's a very important detail here that I think we need to understand.
Okay.
Krakauer didn't just send this letter and sort of leave it at that.
Okay.
He set a very specific deadline.
Okay.
January 13, 2003, for Messina to agree to some sort of amicable way to resolve, you know, all of these issues that he had laid out in the letter.
Okay.
Which very strongly implied that if they couldn't reach an agreement by that date, that litigation was going to be the next step.
Okay, so a real line in the sand. All right, so Messina gets this letter. What does she do? Does she try to negotiate? You know, does she try to work things out with Fontana?
You know, she does not. Instead of you know, trying to work things out,
yeah,
she decides to go on the offensive. And she sues Krakauer and his law firm for defamation.
Okay.
Arguing that these accusations that he made in the letter, you know, they were false and that they had damaged her reputation.
Yeah, I mean, from her perspective, I can understand that, right? If someone's yeah. making these serious allegations against you, you want to clear your name.
Exactly.
But the district court kind of threw out the case pretty quickly, right? Like, why was that?
Yeah. So the district court granted what's called summary judgment in favor of Krakauer.
Okay.
And you can think of summary judgment as the court basically saying, you know, look, based on all the evidence, there's really no genuine dispute here about the key facts. And the law is pretty clear.
Okay.
One side is clearly entitled to win. And in this case, the district court cited the judicial proceedings privilege as the reason for granting summary judgment.
Right, right.
And this privilege, as I mentioned earlier, you can think of it as a shield. It protects statements made in the context of judicial proceedings from being subject to defamation claims.
Whoa.
And the district court said, look, this pre-litigation letter, it falls under that protection.
Okay. So this is what's really interesting to me. And I think for our listeners who are, you know, future lawyers, this should start a question.
Yeah.
How can an attorney make, you know, what are potentially very damaging accusations before a lawsuit is even filed and have this protection?
Right. And that's exactly the core of what this case is all about. Right. Yeah. And so Messina, understandably, she's not satisfied with the district court's ruling. You know, she's not satisfied with summary judgment being granted against her. And so she appeals the decision to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals.
Okay. So what is the main legal issue that this appeals court, the D.C. Circuit, has to grapple with? Like, what's the big question they have to answer?
The big question is, does this judicial proceedings privilege, does it extend its protection to lawyers for statements that they make in these pre-litigation settlement letters?
Right.
Or in other words, how far does this legal shield actually reach?
Right, exactly. And to answer that question, they had to really dig into this whole concept of absolute privilege. Mm-hmm. What does that mean in this legal context, and why is it so significant here?
Yeah. So absolute privilege means that this protection, this legal shield that we're talking about, it's very strong. It's very powerful.
Wow.
Now, in the context of this judicial proceedings privilege, it applies when two main conditions are met.
Okay.
First, the communication has to be made in anticipation of litigation.
Okay.
So, you know, the parties have to be seriously considering going to court.
Okay.
And second, the communication has to be related to that potential dispute.
Okay. So it can't just be, you know, random unrelated insults or something like that.
Right, exactly. It has to be connected to the legal issues at hand.
Okay. All right. So far so good. But there's a really important twist here, right?
Right.
What makes it absolute, particularly in the DC circuit, and this is really key for our listeners to understand, is that there's no malice exception. No malice exception.
Yes.
So break that down for us. Why is that such a big deal?
So this is really significant because in a lot of areas of the law where you might have some sort of privilege, that privilege can be lost if the person making the statement, you know, they acted with malice.
Okay.
Meaning that they knew the statement was false or they acted with reckless disregard for the truth.
Okay.
But in this specific context in the D.C. Circuit, with this judicial proceedings privilege as applied to these pre-litigation communications, like settlement letters, there's no malice exception.
Wow.
Which means that even if Krakauer's statements about Messina, even if they were untrue, even if he had some, you know, nefarious motive, the privilege could still protect him from liability as long as those two conditions that we talked about, the anticipation of litigation and the relevance to the dispute, as long as those are met.
So it's a pretty strong protection.
It's a very strong protection.
Oh, so how did the D.C. Circuit, you know, how did they reason that Krakauer's letter qualified for this absolute privilege? Like, what were the key factors, the key points that they considered?
Yeah. So the court, they laid out several reasons for their decision. And the first one, they really honed in on that deadline that Krakauer had set in his letter, that January 13th, 2003 deadline.
Right.
And they interpreted this deadline as a very clear indication that litigation was seriously being contemplated, even though at that point the lawsuit hadn't actually been filed.
Right.
It wasn't just some, you know, vague, distant threat.
Right.
There was a specific time frame in place.
Okay.
Indicating that, you know, legal action was imminent if they couldn't reach a resolution.
So the ticking clock was a big deal.
Big deal.
Okay. What else did the court look at?
So they also really scrutinized the content of the letter itself. And Messina had argued that, you know, the specific accusations that were made against her, that they were, you know, overly detailed and that, you know, they were defamatory because of that level of detail. But the court disagreed. They said, look, these allegations, the alleged breaches of fiduciary duty, the unilateral decision making, this is all directly related to the underlying business dispute between Messina and Fontana, the very dispute that was, you know, very likely to end up in court if they didn't settle.
Right.
And the court, they clarified that the letter didn't have to be vague or nonspecific to maintain this privileged status. You know, it could be very candid and direct about the issues that were at stake.
Okay.
So being specific didn't negate the privilege in this case.
That's interesting. Now, you know, we talked about Krakauer had sent a copy of a draft of this email to a potential mediator, Chaim Kalfon,
right,
before even sending it to Messina.
Right.
So how did that play into the court's thinking?
Yeah, that was actually a very important point in the court's analysis.
Okay.
The fact that he had copied the mediator, they viewed that as being completely within the scope of these privileged communications.
Okay.
Because it was directly aimed at trying to facilitate a settlement.
Right.
You know, sending a copy to the mediator was part of this pre-litigation strategy to try and resolve the dispute without having to go to trial.
Right, right. Avoid a lawsuit altogether.
Exactly. And so the court, they essentially recognized that sharing information with a mediator in anticipation of a potential settlement, you know, that's a key part of this process and it should be protected.
Right. Okay. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So if we take a step back, you know, what's the bigger picture here? What policy is the court really trying to support with this decision?
So the court really emphasized, you know, this policy of encouraging candid discussions during settlement negotiations.
Yeah.
And their reasoning was, you know, if attorneys constantly have to be worried about being sued for defamation for what they say in these settlement letters. Yeah.
Then it's really going to hinder open and honest communication.
Right.
And that's going to make it much harder to resolve disputes outside of court.
Right. Right. Exactly. It's sort of a balancing act.
Right. Exactly.
On the one hand, you want lawyers to be able to really lay out their client's case.
Right.
Make these arguments, you know, try to reach a settlement without having to worry about a lawsuit themselves.
Right.
On the other hand, you can see how someone who's on the receiving end of one of these letters with, you know, strong accusations might feel very targeted, especially if a lawsuit never actually happens.
Yeah, absolutely.
So were there any limits to this privilege?
Yeah, absolutely. And the court, they actually addressed this, you know, they sort of contrasted Krakauer's actions with a hypothetical scenario.
Okay.
And they said, you know, look, if he had sent this letter to a much wider audience, mm-hmm. so if he had published it in the Washington Post,
right,
then the privilege probably would have been lost.
Right. Because that would have been considered excessive publication.
Okay.
So the fact that Krakauer kept the distribution of this letter very limited just to Messina and the potential mediator.
Right.
That was crucial to the court's finding that it was privileged.
Okay. Okay. So it's not just, you know, a license to just broadcast these potentially damaging statements however you want.
Right. Exactly.
Were there any specific quotes from the court's opinion that you think really, really highlight these key principles?
Yeah, I think there are a couple that really stand out. The court very explicitly said that, and I'm quoting here, the privilege applies to statements analogous to those in demand letters.
Uh-huh.
So really kind of underscoring this idea that these pre-litigation communications, they're essentially extensions of the formal legal process when a lawsuit is really on the horizon.
Right. Okay.
And then they also said very clearly, another quote, an actual outbreak of hostilities, meaning, you know, the lawsuit itself is not required.
Mm.
So that just really reinforces that the privilege can, you know, can kick in even before a lawsuit is officially filed, as long as litigation is really being contemplated.
Okay, so those are some pretty clear takeaways.
Mm-hmm.
I want to kind of put this into, you know, a little bit more of a practical context for our listeners.
Right.
You know, a lot of whom are law students, you know, getting ready to start their legal careers.
Right.
So let's say one of our listeners, you know, fresh out of law school, new attorney, their client comes to them, says, hey, I need you to send a very aggressive pre-litigation letter. You know, we need to accuse this other party of, let's say, embezzlement, something serious.
Right.
You know, based on Messina v. Krakauer, are they protected if they send that letter?
That's a great question. Very practical. And, you know, based on the principles that were laid out in Messina, I think the general answer is yes.
Okay.
If, and this is a big if.
Okay.
Litigation is truly a realistic possibility. And the accusations that are being made in that letter, they're directly related to that potential embezzlement claim.
Right.
So that connection is key.
Right. Okay.
However, and this is really important, right, and they got to be very careful to steer clear of including, you know, just random personal attacks or accusations,
yeah,
that have nothing to do with, you know, the embezzlement issue.
Okay.
Because those kinds of statements, they could very well fall outside of the scope of the privilege.
Right.
And could open them up to liability.
Okay. That's a really important distinction to understand.
Yeah.
So what are like the practical, nuts and bolts takeaways for our listeners as they enter the legal profession?
Right.
What are the things they should keep in mind when they're, drafting these kinds of pre-litigation letters and communications?
I think there are a couple of really big ones. First and foremost, whenever you're drafting any kind of settlement letter or demand letter where litigation is a real possibility, you should always be operating under the assumption that a lawsuit is actually going to happen. And having that mindset is going to really help you to make sure that you're, staying within the boundaries of what's going to be considered privilege.
That makes sense. What else?
Second, you got to be really careful about who you're sending these letters to. You want to keep the distribution very limited, strictly to those who absolutely need to see it. So, the client, opposing counsel, and any potential mediators, as we saw in the Messina case. The more broadly you share this kind of potentially sensitive information, the more you risk losing that privilege. And then finally, it's important to remember that while the judicial proceedings privilege that we're talking about here in the context of the DC Circuit, it's quite broad, it's not a free-for-all. Your statements, they always have to be directly relevant to the legal dispute at hand.
So it really is this kind of this balancing act, right? You're trying to be an effective, strong advocate for your client, but you also need to be professional, ethical, and you want to avoid making these baseless, damaging statements that aren't actually relevant to the case.
Exactly. And Messina, it really highlights that tension, right?
Right.
And it shows us that in the DC Circuit,
Yeah.
lawyers, they do have quite a bit of leeway to really engage in some pretty forceful negotiations when litigation is seriously being considered. And as long as what they're saying is relevant to those potential claims,
Right.
but it's not a license to just go on a personal attack spree
Right.
or to make accusations that have nothing to do with the actual dispute.
Right, exactly. So let's as we kind of bring this deep dive to a close here, what would you say is the one key takeaway our listeners should really remember from our discussion of Messina v. Krakauer?
I think the core takeaway here is that Messina, it gives us a really important understanding of how this judicial proceedings privilege operates, specifically when we're talking about pre-litigation communications in the DC Circuit. And it establishes a pretty significant layer of protection for attorneys who are engaged in these, legitimate efforts to try and reach a settlement when a lawsuit is on the horizon and their statements are relevant to those potential legal issues, even if those statements contain, pretty strong accusations. That's really the key.
And for our listeners out there, again, a lot of law students getting ready to embark on their legal careers. Why is it so important for them to really, to lock these principles into their memories? Like, why does this case matter to them?
Well, because understanding the scope and the limitations of this privilege, it's essential. I mean, it's absolutely essential for, representing your clients effectively and for navigating that whole pre-litigation phase, before a lawsuit is actually filed. It gives you the ability, it empowers you to communicate, forcefully and effectively when you need to advocate for your client's interests. But it also makes very clear that you have to be sure that what you're saying is genuinely connected to those legal claims. So it's all about finding that balance between being a zealous advocate and staying within the boundaries of what's legally and ethically acceptable.
So as we wrap up here, we've had a really great discussion about this case. I want to leave our listeners with a final thought, something to kind of chew on. We've talked about how this pretty broad privilege, when it comes to pre-litigation communications, it's designed to encourage open negotiations, to encourage settlements, to keep things out of court. But does it maybe create a situation where lawyers are a little bit too quick to make potentially harmful accusations, before a case even makes it to court? And could that potentially cause, real damage to someone's reputation, even if a lawsuit never actually materializes? It's a it's a really complex issue.
It is.
And I think it's one that, you know, legal professionals are continuing to grapple with. You know, where does that balance lie?
Right, right.
So that's something I want you all to think about. And in the meantime, thanks for joining us for another deep dive.
Yeah, thanks, everyone.